All right, well, welcome to this newest episode of the Enrollment Clinic. I'm here with George Casega. He's the AVP of University Partnerships for M Square Media, or as I know them, MSM. So welcome. So glad to have you here.
Hey, thank you so much. Thrilled to be here with you.
We've met kind of recently, I would say, you know, a few months ago, but you've become a source on a lot of things that are even outside of the scope of what you do, just because, you know, I've realized you have this vast experience in education. Can you talk a little bit about your educational background?
Sure. You know, my career path into education, or at least international education, began with an intent on being in early childhood development. And right around the time of 9/11, my own study abroad experience got canceled. And this had my mind spinning on some international things. And I started working at the university that I had attended. And I had finished a master's degree in curriculum and instruction and really thought I was on that career path. But then the college where I was had a seminary attached, and I started getting involved with their international admissions processes and learning about all the education systems. And it just sent me on a completely new trajectory that still rooted in the best parts of education, but broadening my perspective and horizons to understanding education around the world. So my academic pursuits and research pursuits live in that space. But as that kind of scholar practitioner, it has then turned into a journey of helping recruit international students and all the cross-cultural pedagogy that we are really invested in international higher ed now.
Now, we were talking a little bit earlier before we started that you have over 22 years of experience in enrollment, right? Like in admissions. And I was thinking about that. And, what do you think is the, you know, some of the biggest shifts in trends you've seen over the past 20 years?
Oh, in the past 20 years, I mean, some people who hear this will recognize and hopefully laugh. But, you know, I started in a small college admissions office, even as a tour guide, I suppose, but as a student worker, where we were still using shoeboxes and had note cards and this whole kind of process. And we were just getting into the stage of using kind of a data warehouse and some student systems. And those reports were revolutionary. Over the 20 plus years, one, you always have to remark on how fast time goes by. But, you know, I've seen the pendulum swing between, you know, a new wave of something digital, whether it was email and then back to print materials, onto, you know, instant messengers, and then back to the in-person experience. That pendulum swings back and forth every couple years on, you know, what is the best way to engage our audiences and to kind of advance our students and prospects through the funnel. But ultimately, all of those different modalities still have to be present and be part of that overall experience. There isn't just, you know, the one magic mailer or the one subject line with an emoji that is going to solve all of your problems. So I think, you know, I've seen that pendulum swing, but one of the major shifts is the shift from kind of broad stroke admission materials. You know, you have one prospectus or view book, you have one folder, one something, one or two letters, to now really needing to tailor that experience for the prospects from, you know, lead and prospect, really in my experience through the alumni experience is tailored at every interval. And so having your customer relationship management software and all of these other messaging development strategies in place, that's certainly new from what was happening 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I don't know if you're aware, there's I don't want to call it a chat system, but Unibody, they've done some research, and the research basically indicated that specifically for Gen Z, what they're interested in is really that highly customized communication service to them. So like those mass merge emails with like, "Dear George," and then, you know, just something that's completely not related to me at all, make these prospective students kind of lose faith on the institution. So they really want, you know, this custom hands-on, you know, and I feel like, you know, working for a small university, there's no way we'd be able to provide that customer, you know, centric service at that level, right? And now that you're on the outside of the operator kind of side of the industry and you're, you know, the service provider side of the industry. Do you see a lot of more companies like yours kind of helping provide that hands-on service for the students?
I think so. You know, in a similar vein, I was recently turned on to a group called Campus Community. And it, I think in a similar space, to the extent that I know the group you just mentioned is there in the admissions office, Campus Community is helping institutions tailor that experience from the time through admissions through alumni engagement and while the student experience is happening. And yeah, I think you're exactly right. Institutions need this kind of to provide this experience. It's what our students are expecting. And what outside vendors are able to help with is not just the lived experience of best practice and what have we seen work one place and not somewhere else, to bring that knowledge into an institution so those initial investments can be made well, whether it's just our dollars or our time and our you know, just those resources. But it's also the capacity to take some of that workload away from the existing staff. Many of our offices are leaner than they've been in many, many years. And there's a people are wearing a lot of hats. And so when an outside vendor can come in with that expertise and tell a staff member, here's what we're going to accomplish for you so you can go work on, you know, three or four other priorities, that is a huge win for our partner.
And this is a good segue into the organization, right? M Square Media. Obviously, I've worked with you guys for over a couple of years now, or about almost 3 years. Can you talk a little bit about what is M Square Media? What is it that you guys do, and how do you fit in the overall funnel?
Well, sure. You know, what's, you know, surprising, I didn't know that I was going to make a shift to the other side of the desk. That's the way I've been framing it, because I was in a process where I was working to onboard M Square Media where I was at an institution. And then there was an opportunity to be part of an advisory board. And then, you know, recognizing that the heart and soul of what happens within MSM, you know, we operate colleges, we help recruit students, the same mission that was rewarding for me at a university setting is still alive and present with Absolutely. All of my colleagues and with our mission with MSM. So it was, you know, for me, it feels seamless to have moved to the other side of the desk. And now a lot of the good work that I've invested in for the institutions I've served, but also in professional organizations, I'm just in another channel or lane where I'm able to, you know, contribute that way. M Square Media is, you know, first and foremost, an international marketing and services provider. So whether we are helping an institution deliver, you know, their digital engagement, we have a whole suite of services for digital engagement, virtual recruitment. We will do in-country representation. We have office tours, high school tours that we are now running. We offer the full suite so we can meet an institution where they are. But one of those early questions we're going to be asking a partner is, what is it that you're trying to build? You know, I understand I've done the enrollment management for 20 years. There's always some leader who is saying it's all about headcount. But as an enrollment manager, there are different currencies that you need to deal in when you're on campus. Sure, maybe the CFO or finance teams are really worried about headcount because they're counting consumable credit hours or billable credit hours. But academic deans might be looking at academic class profile. Someone else is going to be thinking about that geographic diversity and what perspectives are in the classroom. So it gets down to what are we trying to build. And MSM, fortunately for me, is in a position where we have a presence in, you know, 20 different markets around the world. We're on every continent. And so professionally, day to day, it's just it's exciting and rewarding to engage with those teams. I use WhatsApp a lot more than I did when I was at university. But you know, we can meet schools where they are and understand what they're trying to build and help them figure out that plan.
Now, how long has MSM been around?
So, you know, certainly the better part of a decade in our in the current way that we might recognize, but we've really been around 12, maybe 16 years in a couple different positions. But, you know, 10 solid years of doing the international student recruitment with in-country representation. But we've all been in the U.S., though, for about 2.5, maybe 3 years, but most of that during the pandemic.
I guess we were one of the first partners.
Yeah.
To work with you guys, and obviously it's been a great relationship, you know, that we've established over the years. You know, one of the things that I've seen is, especially with big agencies, there's been a consolidation, you know, happening out there in the market. And then from a consolidation, I feel like it's all going into platforms, right? Do you see that as a trend, or is that where this is going ultimately?
Well, I recognize, you know, the same trends that you do. And so, you know, within MSM, we have a platform that's called MSM Unify. It is a great aggregator space where a student can go and engage with a wide number of institutions and understand their programs and, you know, the institutions that have an opportunity to engage and recruit those students. But one of MSM's hallmarks is that we're focused on working with partners who are after volume. So, you know, the platform serves an essential role, but it's only one touch point in that student's experience to ultimately deciding what institution is going to be the best fit for them. So one of our strengths is, you know, with in-country representation, we are there as an extension of one of our partner universities' offices, and we're able to meet with recruitment agencies, go to fairs, talk with families. Not as MSM, we are, again, are an extension of our partners' teams. So we're there as the institution. And, you know, I have sometimes joked that the value of that in-country presence is that we are there celebrating local holidays, the birthdays of all stakeholders. And it's that regular presence that helps us turn a recruitment strategy into a more high volume recruitment strategy, more so than you get on the platforms.
You know, and I know this is going to be a very basic question, but I know that this is a question that's always kind of gets asked, right? So what size university would be a good fit to work with a big kind of platform like you guys?
Well, I think any size university would have a meaningful opportunity to engage with any of the players out there. So I wouldn't want any school to rule themselves out. But one of those early conversations is going to be a discussion of, well, again, what are you trying to build? What is your enrollment forecast or your projections that you're trying to achieve? What is that timeline? And then we have to have a very real discussion about, well, what is it going to cost to achieve that? You know, if there's a partner who is trying to recruit 50, 75, 100 new international students from around the world, that is a different conversation and a different price point than if we are only trying to recruit a dozen students, per se. And so we just have to sit and meet and figure those details out. And the cost of tuition at an institution and the rank and the prominent brand are all factors in, you know, how achievable are these outcomes.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the concerns specifically kind of working out there with agent networks, with agencies from an operator standpoint, and I'm, you know, you've been in the same position as well, is if you are a small kind of regionally known brand, right? Like not a big brand out, you're not Michigan State, you're not, you know, like a big global brand out there, you always kind of wonder, like, how am I going to stand out, right? Like how, if I'm working with, say, MSM, how do I get the attention that, say, a big university would get from MSM, right?
Sure. And so, you know, I've been faced with that challenge, and, you know, I have had successes and failures in my career, and that is how you learn. You know, you kind of fail forward on so many things. But, you know, in that model, having a conversation with someone like MSM, we might be talking about articulation agreements and public-private pathways, PPPs. There are, you know, the first step doesn't have to be what you see everyone else doing. At a smaller school, it might be, how do we achieve some regular feeders of students into our program that we can then have reliable forecasting around and then start building some budgets around and then grow from systematically. MSM is able to help because we have partners all around the world already. So if somebody comes to me and says, you know, we have this academic program, you know, we want to try and grow it, but we want to have some more diversity, we can reach out to our network and try and find those pairings because everybody's also trying to partner up. So part of that negotiation and that brokering is finding, well, you know, this program, the school might not have the prominent rank, but the faculty member might, or the program might have an accreditation. And it's just working through those details to make the puzzle pieces fit together, because in most cases, there is a way for both groups to recognize an opportunity to partner up. And then not partner up just in the sense of like a linkage, but partner where they think, that their status is elevated because they are connecting with this other institution. And we just have to do some work to figure out where that is. And again, with MSM's existing network, well over 1,000 institutions worldwide that we partner with, we have the capacity to help a smaller school like that solve that situation.
Would MSM be an A to Z type of partner, right? Say I'm, you know, the director of admissions and I have a certain budget a year. Would MSM provide also a lot of the marketing support, or is it just one tool in the entire tool set?
No, that's why I led with MSM is first and foremost an international marketing and services provider, because while, you know, part of our model mirrors the kind of the recruitment agency model, because a lot of institutions, there's another trend right now, a lot of institutions, not that they ever had gigantic budgets, but they have smaller budgets than they did before. So when we operate on a performance-based model, that gives some a sense of security or more opportunities for some of these enrollment deans to connect with us, because we'll make the investment up front. And then, you know, our return comes by seeing the students enroll and pay tuition at the institution. That is a model that works very well for most of our partners. Now, if we're talking about doing high school tours, or if we're going to be helping build out your digital recruitment strategy or your social media presence, we have that expertise across all platforms, at least all leading platforms. Right. We have the sensitivity to work with them across cultures, because that very much matters.
Gotcha.
That, to the same point we talked before about how it's not a broad stroke message and that it's tailored to a student. I think we've also, for many years, been able to have kind of a US-centric approach to what our messaging looks like. But now we need to be able to convert our message and tailor it for what makes sense in Latin America, or more specifically, the individual countries. That takes a lot of time and work. That is something that MSM helps our partners with.
You've been involved in at different levels, right, of the industry, and also you've been involved in a lot of these leadership type of training, Leadership Institute. There was something, the Gateway Leadership Institute, that you're involved. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? That was pretty interesting.
I've been an affiliate with Gateway for a couple of years now. And right now we are running we call it the Gateway Leadership Institute. The focus this fall is entirely on reimagining careers in international higher education. So we have a cohort of participants who are really doing a deeper dive into what that career plan is. They're doing a skills assessment. They're doing LinkedIn optimization. We're working on individual career coaching and some specific goals. We're developing some resources so that everybody can benefit. All of our participants contribute to a publication or a resource that helps build their own resume, but they learn a lot in that process. But through the Leadership Institute, we have focused on duty of care and enrollment management. We've done the ed tech space. In the spring, I believe we're going to be focused on global partnerships and those articulation agreements, because that's a space where MSM has a strength and can help folks in. And so it's a nice marriage of some of the different hats that I wear to bring, you know, to elevate these conversations, because I have absolutely been the person in the room who was afraid to ask a question because I thought everyone else in the room knew the answer and that I was somehow the one. And I've gotten very comfortable being the person who asks what, at least in my mind, seems like a silly question or that I should know already. But I've definitely learned. I've been doing it for 22 years, so that's not the longest anyone's done it, but it's enough where I'm just comfortable acknowledging, you know, knowing what I don't know. And I've had leadership roles in AIRC and NAFSA in TICEP, many of the professional organizations, not because I'm a glutton for the volunteer work, but I find so many answers there. And, you know, if I'm presenting somewhere, one of my goals is not to, you know, just give a deluge of information in that session and then good luck. I try to prepare my materials and everything so that when I'm back alone at my desk, I have enough resources to at least have a start, or I've created a network. I try to link in the people in my room. I used to discredit LinkedIn, and now I absolutely love it because it's a place where you can go and maybe ask that question you were afraid to ask in the conference room with 200 people around. You can still go find somebody that you met through one of the professional organizations. I've taken so much from the professional organizations that I feel compelled to want to give back.
Yeah, I'm with you on the LinkedIn thing. I've actually especially the past year, year and a half of really, it's become truly like a resource and you can go out there and ask questions. And I have a lot of people kind of reach out to me and ask me specific questions. So it's definitely a good resource to have, but it's funny because when you were talking about how being the person in the room, you know, that felt like you were the only one who didn't know the answer. And I'm on the same boat. And I think a lot of people in our situation are on the same boat just because this industry moves so fast, right? I mean, you know, you have country-specific relationships with the U.S., let's say, and all of a sudden, you know, there's no visas from that country, or a certain thing happens, and now, you know, if, say, you know, a big chunk of your international students come from India, and something happens between India and the U.S., now you have to replace 40% of your total student count, right? You're like, where is that going to come from? You know, it's like the second largest population of the world. So
well, you know, there was a year, it was, I think it was 2014, but you know, where I was, the university where I was, you know, many schools were benefiting and were happy to serve many of the SACM or Saudi Arabian Cultural Mission students that were in the US at the time. And during the summer, it might have been June, this is how I remember it anyway, SACM from DC called us and told us that our state was being frozen and that they were actually moving large cohorts, you know, 50, 75 students who were already admitted to us for the fall. Mind you, it's
right,
June.
Right.
And, you know, so this was a huge budget implication. And we had done all this good work. And, you know, fortunately, the university was able, you know, assess the, didn't think that we had dropped the ball. We were understanding these things. Right. But it did really put us in a position afterwards to think about and really understand the different budget models. Another program that I help facilitate is with AIRC, American International Recruitment Council.
Right.
We have a certificate called ISREP, and it's all about preparing international enrollment management professionals for recruitment. And in there, we have a whole module where we talk about at least the six leading budget models that universities operate in. Because as a you know, employee, sometimes decisions that are made can just seem completely irrational, and that you know, it just seems counterintuitive to what you think
right.
the mission is. And if you understand the budget model and how the leadership is often thinking about things, you can at least discern how the budget or why the decisions are being made, and then start learning how to work that system. I've learned, and I think one of my leaders is the one who coined this, if it's even a phrase to coin, but he said, you know, there's a clear difference between an ask and a tell. If you go to your leadership and ask for resources to enroll or for recruitment, well, everybody's asking the provost or whoever for, you know, resources. And so it kind of gets lost in the fray. But if you go with a tell, where you say, here are three budget models, and here are the outcomes under each budget model, tell me which outcome you want as the university leadership, that sparks different conversations. And, you know, what I've really valued with my work with MSM is having these conversations with campus leaders who, you know, not just the recruitment team, but the deans of enrollment and sometimes the provosts and presidents. And it has reinforced my experience with that ask versus the tell, because it doesn't mean you're going to automatically get what you're after, but it does help spark an actual conversation beyond just saying, oh, we need $10,000 to do XYZ, always tacking on those outcomes. It makes a big difference.
So quick question on trends at MSM. Again, you know, Southeast Asia, just overall, generally, is kind of like the biggest source of international students here in the US, right? Like if you were to take everything from India to Vietnam. I was looking at some research from Education USA, and it just seems like traffic from those countries is starting to decline, but traffic from smaller countries like Sierra Leone, you know, Nicaragua is starting to kind of grow, at least here in the US. Is that something that you guys are seeing as well in your microcosm?
Sure. And it's that's part, one of our strengths, and part of the reason we are in, you know, 20 different countries. Even though we have the footprint in a particular country, we're still traveling to the entire region and still being engaged there. It's so that we can help deliver for our partners. Yes, we still have, there will always be the top three or four sending countries. Even if those countries change, you can look back at the IIE Open Doors data and see from the 1948 or so to through now, you know, how those countries have changed. It hasn't always been who's leading today, sending students to the U.S. So we have to be ready to, you know, manage those shifting student mobility trends. But one of the benefits of working with a partner, or at least a strategy to understand, if you're a smaller office, or even if you're that one international person in a large domestic admissions operation, having a partner who can come in and, you know, provide that market intelligence, that tactical business intelligence that lets you make smart decisions without having to be the one all-knowing source about every country's market at the same time. Mm. You know, that's not a fair ask of anybody, but it is sometimes the seat our international enrollment professionals find themselves in. And so a partner can come in and help customize those strategies, developing the marketing collateral, whether it's print or digital, to, you know, to have a meaningful presence in those markets. Because most schools are also, you know, the headcount matters, but the geographic diversity matters. So if a partner comes to me and says, we are trying to get, you know, let's say we have a lot of students from, you know, Thailand, or, you know, we're just pick any country. Yeah. Right, we have a lot of students from this particular market. MSM is going to look at a recruitment strategy and say, okay, well, we have a presence in all of these places. Rather than trying to get, you know, 50 students just from Southeast Asia, we're going to look at our markets and say, okay, let's have a strategy that gets us 2 to 5 students from each of these different places. One, it's much more obtainable because the goal is manageable, but it results in both the headcount and the geographic diversity that most of our partners are looking for.
One of the questions that comes up, you know, when you're kind of looking to partner, right, with somebody like MSM is, and you kind of find out that, well, they have 300 other institutions that they're partnered with. And the question is like, well, how do I ensure, you know, that I'm getting the right, you know, kind of attention, right? As you guys are growing, you know, one of the concerns is, does that mean that focus will go away from me and will spread out to all these other institutions? Like, how do you mitigate for that?
Yeah. So when we talk about our kind of our in-country representation or our global marketing office, right now we are growing, but we're growing into scale. Right now I'm actively talking with partners in a way that, or at least for potential new partners, in a way that complements what's happening already. So is there a region of the U.S. that we don't have representation in? Are there programs or markets or some type of elements to the school's culture that makes it different, so that we go into the market with a fresh portfolio of partners rather than trying to have the same experience repeated over 100 times? So right now we have around, you know, a little over 30 partners who are doing in-country representation for. It wouldn't make sense for us to try to scale to 500 partners like that, because we'd be exactly in the scenario you're at. But we do welcome conversations with schools so that, you know, while we're in market, we're also a performance-based model. So it does us no good to just onboard people and all the time and staff resources on our end to have partners for whom we're not able to actually achieve these enrollment goals. And it is a competitive marketplace. So if we are not delivering, then our partners have an opportunity to look elsewhere. So we are highly motivated and incentivized to really deliver for our partners.
Right. So I would say it's a surgical approach, right, to kind of adding on new partners, you know, that matches both geographically and kind of both the partner's goals and MSM's goals at the same time. Right.
Right. But, you know, I think last time I saw you in person was at the Education USA Forum. Next week, right, I'm going to be at the Pi Live in North America in Toronto. I'll be at ARC. We go to NAFSA, AIEA. You know, we want to have these conversations because MSM has a large portfolio of services. So even if every partner isn't interested in, you know, high school tours, they may be interested in the in-country representation or the digital marketing suite of resources that we have. And those are spaces where we're not going to encounter that scenario of kind of diluting the marketplace, because we have the expertise, we have the people and the skills. So meeting with a partner and helping them shore up their whole recruitment process and experience is a real strength, and something that we can do with partners many times over, because each school in the U.S. is so distinct. It's really a fun process to help them cultivate those key characteristics. And I know you're about to say one other thing I want to share is, What's also been rewarding working with our partners is when I talk with a school and they'll tell me what their leading talking points are, or what they think their pride points are. You know, that's always a place to start the conversation. But then when we're being able to pull in our country managers and the local cultural expertise, and we start training the professional staff at the universities, we can help them understand how pride points that they're celebrating in Latin America may not be the same pride points that they should celebrate in you know, half of the African nations if they're trying to attract students. And just having those discussions, you know, personally, I think it's fun.
So I'm asking for a friend. What do you think is one of the tools that MSM offers that gets underestimated by your partners?
A tool that we offer that is underestimated. You know, when I think about in-country representation, I don't know that it's underestimated, but it is, it's we're one of the, to my knowledge, we do it on a performance-based model. So we are not asking schools to give us a large upfront sum to establish a business entity or an office, or to, you know, have that repeated in every market that we go to. We will keep to our performance-based model because we've been doing it for over 10 years already. We have the infrastructure, the strength and experience. So that really does give us a competitive advantage, because we can deliver those results for our partners without having to ask them to make the large upfront investment. We do that for our partners and then work together, because our ability to recoup those front-end costs and then really have a win-win scenario for both of us is based on delivery in a performance-based model. And I think that can maybe fly under the radar a little bit and maybe isn't entirely recognized as one of our differentiators, but I'm thrilled to highlight it, because it really is attractive to partners, especially those who have lean budgets, lean staff. We're able to come on and, you know, take some of that workload from the existing staff. We can help with admissions and application processing. All of our partners, when we do in-country representation, get a person in like a behind-the-scenes admissions staff member who makes sure that emails are answered and responded to within a 24 or 48-hour time frame. We're highly motivated to make sure the enrollment process is effective, that it's consistent, that it's accurate, and that we have students who are really happy and then persist at the institutions where they choose to enroll.
Excellent. Now, I know, you know, we can talk about this stuff all day. And I know you're very passionate about leadership. And, you know, it's one of those things that obviously I'm trying to develop, you know, kind of managing my own team, but also kind of managing myself at the same time. Is there a leadership model that works best for higher academic institutions?
Well, I think a lot of us were shaken and our leadership strategies were tested, certainly during the pandemic, and this ongoing shift where there's a blend, this hybrid model of in-office, working from home. You know, in my own experience, I've gone from 22 years of being in an office setting. You know, most recently, I had a team of approximately 30 people, you know, who I was engaging with daily and doing all types of things with, now being a remote first organization, where I still have a team. I interact with about, you know, 20, 25 people in multiple countries on a regular basis. That has tested leadership. When I'm entering a new role, or even if I'm entering a conference session that's going to last 45 minutes, I'm often thinking to myself, you know, that one of two things are happening. Either there is a lot of trust, or there isn't trust. So I either have to gain the trust of the people in the room, and that's slowly going to build, or they're starting with a lot of trust in me, and I have the opportunity to either cement that trust or, you know, not deliver and have it be eroded away. And thinking about things in those terms helps me kind of read the room and really level up if I don't feel like I'm delivering where I need to be. As much as I love the leadership conversation, I have found, now that I'm on the other side of the desk and in a remote first situation, I have many friends who are leaders in, you know, leaders in Google and leaders in Comcast and Xfinity and all these places that have been doing remote first work for years. And so I have really been working to understand what those strategies are and how do you make a meaningful check-in with somebody versus just, you know, being a remote shadow or something where you're still managing. But one thing that's certainly true is, you know, you know, a former boss of mine used to say, you know, everything rises and falls with leadership. And you have the opportunity to contribute to a successful leadership situation just by yourself at your desk as much as you do as being the president of a university. And, you know, fortunately, I have been in a career where I've had a lot of passion and genuine interest for the students that I've worked to serve, as well as the colleagues that I have. And that just makes working in international higher education, whether you're at a university or on the private side, very, very rewarding.
Awesome. Well, George, it was so great to have you here. You're a wealth of information, and I'm hoping we can get to chat more in the future. And I've said this to you before, and I'm going to say it again. You're one of the people with the most positive energy that you radiate every time I see you.
Well, you're very kind to say that. You know, the positive energy that I'm mindful of right now. You know, I saw an article this morning that Canada, you know, talk about, you know, one other thing that affects our enrollment management. And I know we're wrapping up. But, you know, a national strategy around international education matters, and our immigration policy. If people aren't involved in their state study groups, you know, I helped start study Indiana. I've been involved with Study Colorado. The U.S. Department of Commerce does great work. Talking about immigration reform for education really, really matters. Canada just had an article about Canada that said, rather than working 20 hours on campus, they're going to have the capacity for students to work 20 hours off campus. That's very attractive. We have to stay competitive with our neighbors nationally if we want to continue to attract these students.
They're now number one country to go to for international students, and you know, I don't want to talk about Canada. But it's you know, every single research that comes out, it's like Canada number one. And sure, I'm thinking, like, it's really Toronto cold out there. Come over here.
Don't alert anything. I want to be able to get over the border easily.
That's right. But I agree with you. You know, one of the biggest, you know, challenges for international recruitment for us is specifically this idea, this ability for students to come here and kind of, you know, figure out if there's a path, right, to using the education that they get here, you know, towards this country, right? And I don't see what's the issue with that. But yeah, you're right. Definitely we need some education reform.
Well, I invite your audience to find me on LinkedIn and connect with me there. Whether people want to talk about the professional organizations in international education, they have some, you know, random question. I may not know the answer, but I'm likely to know somebody who can help them. Or if you want to learn more about M Square Media, I'm happy to welcome all of those conversations. So thank you for the opportunity to connect today.
Excellent. And are you on Twitter or any of these other social media?
Focus strictly on LinkedIn. So this is where I focus all my professional energy.
All right, George, good to talk to you.
Hey, you too, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.